is you could say it's different than America because they're low class and they're not proud of it. You know, Americans low class and proud, you know, like that. But no, the Australians are just low class. So, did you bring the keys? You know, so it's just. It's just like they don't care. Kumar Krishnamurti said that in Kali Yuga they're the perfect devotees. Yeah, because it says they're active enough but not mental. Americans and British are too mental.
Yeah.
You know? So the, you know, it means basically the Anglo Saxons take over the planet. The problem is that the Americans and British are too mental. Well, the Aussies aren't mental at all.
Not
100%
because they're not as neurotic.
Yeah, less neurotic. Yeah.
Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Okay, page 23. Jiva is Karta and Bhokta. Right, so karta means the doer and bhokta, the enjoyer. We have already seen that the jiva is knowing a subject, gyata. The same jiva who is the knower is also the agent of action, karta, and enjoyer of pleasure and pain, bhokta. This means the same atma who performs karma also enjoys the fruit of action. So he knows the subject, he's the agent in doing the applying the subject, and he's the one who enjoys the results from the subject. Right? Do we understand in here is that when we're going through these, even because this is the first time going through that we're analyzing on this level, right? It means, you know, this will continue through because there's always these elements. But the point is that one is able to analyze and see the difference, you know, and appreciate, even if, you know, 5 minutes later we forget what we were talking about, right? But the ability to analyze is important because then you can actually take anything that you're studying at the time and be able to analyze and be able to appreciate the finer points. Does that make sense? Otherwise, so many times the purports deal with finer points, but we leave those. And we just deal with what is more obvious to us. But this way, then we can get so much more out of there. So we shouldn't worry as if we can't remember the difference between one thing and another. Right now we're just dealing, okay, Shankara is one thing, you know, and then the Vaishnava is the other. But, you know, there's Vishishta Dvaita, Vishuddha Dvaita, you know, all these things. And
so we're not memorizing, we're learning how to think.
Yeah, that's it. But, I mean, the more you understand of these, the better. But,
yeah.
You know, because then you can remember, because all these things come up. In other words, what the acharyas are addressing is how people think. That means what modes of nature are causing what things. Mm-hmm. That's what's coming out. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Because if you're dealing with pure devotional service, you don't have to, there's nothing to establish. Right? There's only the performance of and tasting of. But one's having to establish the proper knowledge because there's improper knowledge. Right? So where there's darkness, then you put light and then it is good. Okay. The Advaita philosophy, however, does not admit that the true self, which is pure, undifferentiated consciousness, is the knower, since as knowership involves change. Right? Because if you know something, then there's some kind of transformation, there's some kind of, you know, going to be an activity, a result, all these different things. So they're basically saying is that the self ultimately doesn't know. Right? So it's not necessarily a very attractive feature. Right? It sounds good. I'll be I'll get out of the material world and I'll enjoy eternally. But when that means that, you know, you're basically going to be just like a stone that doesn't know anything, you know, then it kind of starts to lose something. Yeah. While the self must be immutable, right? Because there can't be any change due to knowledge. Right? Because before you didn't know, now you know. That's a change. The functions such as knowing, feeling, and willing are the characteristics of the empirical ego. The consciousness conditioned by the internal organ, antakarana. Right? So, yeah, knowing, feeling, willing, we say thinking, feeling, and willing. Right? So thinking or knowing means the thinking is contemplating what is the field, what are the facts. Right? Mm-hmm. Then feeling is the goal that you can get from those facts by operating. And willing is then the desire to, means that willingness to take part in that process, you know, of the field of the knowledge that will get you what you're feeling about. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So that's what the mind does. So he's saying is that is based on the ego, means how you identify, because you're going to think, feel, and will according to your ego. Right? Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Because the mind is what's doing the thinking. Right? But it's going to think according to the ego. So how you identify yourself is how you're going to think. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the point we made in the morning, is that for the devotee, he identifies himself as servant of Krishna. Right? But the neophyte, he still also identifies himself with the material energy. So that's why it's prakriti bhakta. Right? He's a devotee, but materialistic, because there's material identity. Right? But as soon as that's given up, then he becomes a devotee, or a pure devotee, and devotee are the same. Right? By this definition. So then he's a devotee, because he only identifies as servant of Krishna. There isn't another identity. Does that make sense?
What's an internal organ?
Internal organ. That's another... That's a standard kind of philosophical term they use for the mind, right? Because you have the senses, and the senses, the five knowledge acquiring senses, the five working senses. You have the sense objects, and you have the how you say the sense itself. Does that make sense? So we have the mind. I mean, we have the eye, right, which is the sense. Then you have seeing, which is the what do they call that, tanmatra. And then you have what is seen, right? So there's three things there. But what's seen is not within, because that will be made out of earth, water, fire, and air, and ether. So therefore, the sense itself, the tanmatra, and the working senses. So that's 15, right? Then the one controlling all that is the mind. So it's considered the internal sense, because it's the subtle one that's controlling all these others. Right? So that's why sometimes when it says the 16, then it means that's the 16. And sometimes those are counted as one. Right? Does that make sense? Because then what you're seeing and smelling all that is the earth, water, fire, air, and ether. Right? So then you just have to mention those. Yeah. And then, yeah.
Is the eye, the seen, and the seeing?
The eye sees.
Okay.
But you can only see because there's the principle of seeing.
Okay.
Right? So the seeingness, hearingness, tastingness, those are the tanmatras. Right? So the point is because Krishna sees, therefore you can see. Right? The universal form sees, therefore you can see, because you're only seeing. Your eye is part of one of the eyes of the universal form, right? And you're only seeing other things of the universal form. You know? So that's why it says says he could be an agent of action. He isn't the actual, but because he's the agent of action, we call him the Karta. But he's not the actual one doing it. He's only an instrument in it. Right? Does that make sense?
So it's the eye, the seeing, and the seen, yeah?
Yeah, and then what's seen? So that way you can say seer and seen.
Okay.
But you have the sense, and then what is, you know, and then the, I'm not sure, that's the problem. Does English have a term for these kind of things? That's the problem, it doesn't quite have the, because there's the sense and the sense object, but what is, how are they connected? They're connected through seeing. So the eye sees the object. You understand? So you have all those three. Does that make sense? Yeah?
The Advaita philosophy denying that the soul is a knower.
Yes.
Does that imply that they would also have no sense of identity?
There's no sense of identity. There's nothing. That's why, how can there be Ananda? Because Ananda means, you know, you can appreciate the difference between one thing and another. Therefore, there's Ananda. You know, and if it's, and if you don't, so they're looking at, I'm appreciating the difference here and I'm suffering. So therefore, if I don't appreciate the difference, then I'll be happy. Mm-hmm. No, but even here, you appreciate a difference, you're happy. The point is you want to, it means the negative you want to remove, leave the positive. But they're thinking they're going to remove the negative and the positive, and it'll end up as positive. Or somehow or another, neutral is better than positive. You know, so it's not well thought out.
If there's no sense of identity, then basically there's no consciousness.
There's no consciousness, yeah. Because we're basically the only ones that say that the soul is conscious after liberation. Because all the other schools say he's not conscious. You know, his being means, in other words, consciousness is simply because you're in contact with material energy. So you're conscious of the different things. But when you're not in contact, there's nothing to contact, so therefore you're not conscious. They don't understand there's a spiritual world that you have contact with, so you're still conscious. Right? And in any case, even if he's not in either, the soul is still conscious in Brahman. He's still conscious. That's why he falls down from it. Right?
Who are we?
Who are we?
We are the only ones who say...
Who are we?
Yes.
We are the world. What we do you want?
Gaudiya or...
There's also, I think, this funny little box is called we.
Yeah, that's yeah, the Japanese thing.
Yeah, so I mean, what we are you talking about here?
That's...
What do you mean, we? What man?
We man. You say we are the only
because
one.
I mean the cookie monster, he says me.
Yeah. No, it's not.
So there's me realization. So you have to define this we.
We are the only ones who have this concept.
We mean Vaishnavas.
Yes.
It means Vaishnavas, you know, Vedanta, in other words, Vedanta, Vaishnava Vedanta is the only one that actually understands that the soul is still conscious. Yes. Otherwise, all others don't have that understanding. Right? Because in their idea, consciousness comes from matter.
Yeah.
Right? But, you know, that's how you can get all these funny theories that, yeah, you know, the salt water is there with all the minerals and all that, and then a lightning bolt hits it, and then, you know, suddenly there's this little there, and then he decides, hey, this is cool, but wouldn't it be nice to fly?
Yeah.
You know, and so then he develops wings and, you know, comes out and...
Later he plays baseball.
Yeah, but then you can't have wings, so... Therefore, Red Bull. Right? So he can still maintain the wings and play ball.
Always a plan.
Always a plan, yes.
So Maharaj, the point of acknowledging the thinking, feeling, willing to the mind is thinking that it comes from matter.
Yes, they think, oh, it comes from matter. Because all this comes from matter. Because the Shastras say that these are material, so they think this is the source of the consciousness. Right? So that element that sees it, when like Shankya and they are explaining how the intelligence is the closest thing to the soul, then that chit, that I say, that consciousness of the soul reflects onto the intelligence. And then from the intelligence, it shines onto the object being seen through the senses, right? Because the intelligence controls the senses. means mechanical controlling the senses is done by the intelligence, because that's distinguishing what's common, what's different. What you're focusing on, why you're focusing, that's controlled by the mind. Right? So ultimately, the mind is the main controller, but the actual controller, you know, it means mechanically. You know, it's just like you have the guy in the back of the limo and the guy driving the car. So who's driving the car? The driver. Right? But it's the guy in the back seat that tells him where to go. Right? So in other words, the driver is the intelligence and the guy in the back seat's the mind. That's why it's always a problem, right? Backseat drivers are always a problem. Right? So that's why you get so much difficulty from your mind. Right? Does that make sense? So that kind of aspect is there. So means yeah. So the thing is that it's reflected, right? So the intelligence, and that reflects through the sense onto the sense object. It's illuminated because of the illumination from the soul. Therefore, then the intelligence can see, right? But it's the soul who's actually seeing. On one level, but actually the mechanics of it, it's the soul, the eye that's seeing, not the soul. You know, so it depends on which way you're looking at it, which aspect you bring out. But the point is what they can explain is that consciousness, that's, they'll take it that because he's looking at the matter, therefore he's conscious, and that consciousness is then reflected. But if he's not looking at matter, then there's no consciousness, no reflection, so there's no, you know, but our point is, no, that potency, they're not understanding, that is inherent in the soul. The soul is consciousness. So it's the nature of the soul that's there, but it's being misapplied. So that's where, up to that point, then what they explain works really nicely, because they're going by Shastra and Upanishads, and that, but they only go up to a point and stop. That's where Vedanta can answer all things. That's the point. Vedanta can answer anything that the Veda talks about. You know, because all of what's being talked about is connected to Vishnu. So Vedanta is explaining Vaishnavism. But now within Vaishnavism, then, if you want that full picture of that, that's a Chintaveda Veda Tattva. Because that gives everything at once, all the things that are direct, all the things that are indirect. It means all the things that are contradictory, all the things that are not, everything together can function harmoniously. So that gives the completeness.
When you say that the soul is covered, so yeah, it cannot, then what it can only see is in that reflection is the material energy without Krishna.
Yeah. And even, yes, without, means, no, the soul at any time can see Krishna, if he wants. But the tendency is we identify with the material energy, so they don't want. Right? Means according to your identity is how you see. That's the point.
So that covering is the identity?
That covering is the identity. It means because we identify with it. Right? In other words, the modes of nature are there, then we identify with certain aspects. You know, that looks interesting. Like Lord Brahma has no experience of the material world. Right? At least if you're first time. Right? So therefore, he just knows what are the principles that are all available. Now, if he's looking at that and comparing that to his interaction with Lord Vishnu, then he may decide this is better. So he surrenders to Vishnu, goes back to Godhead. So he only took one birth in the material world. Right? But you could see that, oh, these are the options, so these look interesting. And so then he's born again. Right? So that means being a born again is not actually ideal. Right. One wants to avoid that.
So just clarifying, so the identity actually somehow prevents us from seeing the truth, from seeing Krishna and everything.
Yeah, but it's still our choice what we cover ourselves with. Just like if you cover yourself with a blanket, then you have a certain amount that you can see. If you cover yourself with a thin piece of cloth, then also it's different. Right? You know what I'm saying? So depending on what you cover yourself with is how you see things. So that's why the identity is what the discussion is. You know, if I'm the blanket man, then I make the decisions based on that. You know what I'm saying? So there's blanket man and chiffon man, you know, so like that. So then they
this time of year it's tempting to be blanket name.
Yes, one tends more towards blanket name in this season, yes. Unless you're austere.
To a certain point.
No, but the point is this. If it's a big festival, you're not going to wear a blanket. You're going to wear a chiffon sari. Right? So even though it's cold and it's austere, still you're going to do it because of the particular necessary of the duties.
Talking about me specifically?
About you specifically? No. Then it's a matter of... there it's just a matter of, you know... I would say, okay, yeah, it's just a matter of what blanket, because you have the choices. Warm, itchy blanket, warm, not itchy blanket.
Or warmed ones.
Then put the unitchy one first, then put the itchy one. That way if people get jealous and they come up and touch it, it's pokey, and then they'll drop their jealousy.
That's the main reason.
Yes.
The other things are cycling fits.
Yes.
Got it.
Okay, the functions such as knowing, feeling, and willing are the characteristics of the empirical ego, the consciousness conditioned by the internal organ, antakarna. Right, the internal, you know, cause, right? The cognizership, that's a good one, no?
Yeah, it's
the cognizership, gyatritva. Actually belongs to the internal organ. Right. The self appears to be the knower because of the superimposition of the internal organ on it. Because then what is he knowing? He's knowing matter. But the soul doesn't actually know matter because it doesn't have any connection. He knows transcendence. So it appears that the soul is the knower, but it's actually the, what do you call it, the internal organ. But the difficulty is that the soul identifies with it. So in this way, he becomes the knower. Right? Because if you're the one, in other words, I want the result, therefore I have to be the doer. Right? Like if there's this really nice result here, you know, and then I ask, oh, hey, whose is this? The person says, it's mine. How do you make that connection that it's yours? Because you did the work. But actually the modes of nature and everything else did the work, but the soul identifies with it. So on the platform that the soul doesn't actually do it, then the impersonalists are correct. But the idea that there is no conscious, no difference, that's where that goes wrong. See, all of them basically, most of the ones, if they're based on the Veda, they're most of them are correct up to the point of liberation. But beyond liberation, that's where their whole philosophy falls apart, because it's a material philosophy. So it works within the material sphere. So that's why in so many of these we have a common ground with them, because it's our philosophy anyway. Problem is our philosophy means, in other words, if you have something, I mean, Krishna is everything. So if you have everything with Krishna, that's Krishna conscious, right? So that's spiritual. But if you have things without Krishna, that's material. Right? So that means it's half true. Right? But half is not true. But the most important part's not true. Right? So technically you're right in moving the material energy and either elevating yourself to heaven planets, elevating yourself to liberation. You're using the mechanics that are true. Problem is that that's not actually the nature of the soul to be involved in karma or jnana. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Means the superintendent means that because what you know is based on the false ego of your mind.
So it depends on your identification.
Yes, like that. That's why it's superimposed, because the soul could know transcendence, but instead the soul knows matter, but he only knows matter through what's imposed by the mind. Right? But it's not that the mind itself is acting separately. You know, or this Maya is acting separately, and the soul is just, you know, he was just part of the ether that was just there, and suddenly this pot came along, and he's inside a pot, and now he's an individual, and hey, what's going on here? No, he's made the choice himself. You know, he goes, wow, nice pot, you know, like that. And so then, therefore, then that's his, that's what he looks like.
He's in the pot.
Yeah, in the pot, yeah.
Himars soul identifies with the mind, and then like then the mind in that way becomes the knower.
Yes, yeah. The mind is actually what knows, but the mind, being dead matter, can only know because of its connection with the soul, yeah, who has chit potency, which is knowledge. Yeah. But the problem is that that knowledge is covered by this material identification, because what the mind is knowing is only matter. And it's only knowing it in a material way. Because if the soul applies that chit potency through seeing, using the mind and senses to see matter in connection with Krishna, then you're not getting a material result. Then he's not covered by the modes. He's actually free from the modes. But he's still using the material facilities. You know, just like the person is a gross materialist and he has a nice kitchen. Right? Then he goes out one day, bumps into the devotees, finds out about devotional service, and finds out about cooking for Krishna. And so he wants to do that. He goes back home, the same kitchen, now he's cooking for Krishna. Right? So it's not that the facilities have to change. Does that make sense? That's why we're discussing this morning, that you don't, it's not you're changing the nature, you're purifying the nature. A question that almost came up, but didn't quite, was why is the devotee seems like one and then after years he moves up through the things? There's also the element is that if he had been that purification had been there, where that teacherness would have been more prominent, then he would have gotten it, because there were teachers back then in the 70s. But there's the element of passion was more there, so goodness and passion makes a kshatriya. But he's not satisfied at it, because he's supposed to be situated just in goodness, not passion and goodness. I've seen, you know, people go through all four. Right? They come in as really ignorant and all that, and then they get a little bit active, but it starts getting, you know, a little vaishya, you know, stuff like this and all that. Then it gets, and then it turns into the brahminical.
And stays there.
And stays there. Yeah. Like that. It's just as they get purified. It's over the, you know, because with kids, it's over years you see this happen. But with adults, you also see. Like I saw one person, he knew farming like I don't think many other devotees knew. Like that. But then he saw that, you know, administration was more, you know, you could, you know, control the farm, get devotees and this and that, and got into that and burnt him out like that. Disappeared for a while, and now bumped into him, and now he's a school teacher. Really happy, very peaceful. Like this and that. And so it's just, you know, that was where we were supposed to. So in other words, that ability to know something. So he knew that so well, but he wasn't satisfied there, because that's not. So he wasn't seeing is that it's actually brahminical that I know things, I could teach things. And so he could have taught farming and cow protection, you know, as a subject. Then he would have been satisfied, but instead he came up through it, you know, came up through, because he took it that, no, I am that, rather than that's my subject. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So someday you get that also.
Maharaj, in what sense do we refer to the mind or intelligence as knowing or the knower of something when they're unconscious?
Because they're reflecting. The example is given, if you have a mirror, it's not producing any light at all, but it can reflect light. And so from that, then you can see things. So if you look in the mirror, you can see that object. But it's seeing that object from the reflection of the chit potency, of the knowledge potency of the soul on it. But because the soul identifies now with that reflection, it thinks, I am that. When you're supposed to think, I am that. you know. So in other words, he's thinking, technically in Upanishads, he's thinking, I am this. But he's supposed to think, I am that. Which is spiritual.
Eta promise. I am this.
Yeah. Yeah, like that.
So the mind is a mirror.
The mind, that's why it's called the mirror of the mind. So the mind, because the mind is the mirror, so then it has the aspect of intelligence and ego. So depending upon what modes, it's that the mirror is that much, you know, clean or not. So if it's more clean, then you can more see self-realization. So the spiritual content you can see more easily. If it's really dirty, you can't, or you can see nothing. Like the animals, they can't see any of this. Like I mentioned, that was very interesting. He was talking about the immovable living creatures, you know, the trees or rocks or these kind of things. They only experience the six stages of life: birth, growth, maintenance, reproduction, dwindling, death. That's all they perceive. Right? Then when you get up into the moving animals, they are able to perceive eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Like that. And then as a human being, then can see beyond that in the spiritual.
That was why Prabhupada many times expressed sadness when he saw so many human beings misusing.
Yeah, because it's sad, because every human being is an eternal servant of Krishna. But then they identify so strongly with it that they really think they're the body, and all those things are the body, and all the calamities that come up because of that. You know. Yes.
How do you? What's the process of coming to this realization? Like, I know in theory, because you're telling, but I don't. I guess is it Krishna's mercy? Is it a matter of Krishna giving that realization, or a matter of practice?
It means, in other words, through practice you get the mercy.
And what's the practice?
But it's not the practice itself that causes the mercy. It's by the practice, Krishna is pleased with your sincerity, therefore he reveals.
Okay.
The practice is just the practice of pure devotional service.
Oh, and nothing else?
No, nothing else. You don't have to do anything else. Because within pure devotional service, it includes all the things. You're going to do your service, you're going to apply your intelligence on it. You're going to try to adjust your ego instead of I'm the controller and the joy, I'm the servant. You know what I'm saying? So all these things, you're going to engage the senses in Krishna's service. So you're going to use what knowledge you have to get it done. It means for a particular service, you may need a particular skill. So that requires that particular ordinary knowledge to do it. But the point is if it's to be engaged in Krishna's service, you have to know that science of how to connect it to Krishna. So again, it's back to devotional service. The other things are just, you know, how to just do ordinary things.
Well, I'm thinking more of, like, when I identify something specific I want to work on, I keep on, like, you know, reminding myself of that. So, like, for example, I'm thinking that I might have to do, just say I'm doing a service, I have to continuously think, you know, I'm not this, I'm not...
Oh, that's okay. But along with that, it's I'm not this, I'm that.
Yeah.
Always bring it to that. Don't stop at just I'm not this. I'm not the body. Because then that makes the heart hard. Right? Because then one becomes very stoic and all that. I'm not this, and I just push on and all that.
Yeah, that's what I do.
Yeah. But the thing is this, I'm not this, I'm servant of Krishna.
Okay.
That keeps the heart soft. Because otherwise the other, one may become very austere. You know, but the problem is the heart becomes very hard in the process. So being very renounced, if it's not in connection with devotional service, one becomes hard-hearted. You know, so one wants to avoid that. So it's a matter of being renounced because it's not useful in Krishna's service. It means useful means for you. It may be useful to somewhere else. That's why charity is there. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so always... In other words, the negative is the secondary. The positive is the primary. Right? But in the conditioned state, the secondary gets in the way of the primary. So that's why we deal with it. But it's still not primary. So we may spend a lot of time thinking, I'm not this, but make sure that you see, I'm not this, I'm serving a Krishna, therefore I'll do like this. Because otherwise, I'm not this, so I'll just do the negative side of it. No, because I'm Krishna's servant, I'll do the positive. Right? Does that make sense? This theory does not have a foundation because it is proved that superimposition of cognizantship on the self is an impossibility, since the self, according to Advaita, is an indifferential being. Right? So in other words, this philosophy that they have can only work with us. It can't work for them. You know, so we're not saying that some of these points aren't okay. What we're saying is because they say the soul is undifferentiated Brahman, so there's no consciousness, so it can't be the consciousness of the soul who is reflecting in the material energy. Right? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So we're not defeating that side of it, we're defeating this side of it. We're not defeating the side that this, we're not saying this is not mechanically how it works. Mm-hmm. We're saying that because it works this way mechanically, it proves that the soul has to be inherently conscious. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? So much of the time, when you're dealing with bogus philosophies, it's not that anything they say is bogus. It's their conclusions are bogus. You understand? Much of the time, mechanics, because people only observe the world, and then from how the world functions, they make their philosophy. But sometimes what they put together really doesn't work. The more ignorance is there, the more they say the complete opposite things. You know? Like that, you know. So, why should I get involved in this, you know, like this and like that? It's not a matter of getting involved and this and that. You know, we should be back. We should be peaceful. Yeah, but you're out there, you know, throwing Molotov cocktails also. No, but they have to be stopped. But you just said be peaceful, sit back, don't get involved. You know, these kind of things, they just don't work. You know, it's just motivated. So therefore, the reason is they're out there throwing Molotov cocktails because it's destruction, and destruction is part of ignorance. The lazy don't do anything, that's ignorance. And so therefore, if they do become active, it's destructive. Right? A mode of passion is it's productive, but it's for yourself. You know, so you'll be there, means you want to buy this property, right? So you go to the lawyer, he helps you make all the paper, all do all the things like that. But what you don't know in the meantime is he's also arranged it so he gets the property. So that's mode of passion. Right? So he did something. But then at the end of the day, you find out, oh, sorry, you know, it's not available. You know, like that, they've sold it to someone else. Oh, really? So they're hoping you'll just drop it there. But if you try to find out who, then there's a bit of, yeah, it's a problem. Does that make sense? So, in other words, the things that are mechanically correct according to the Veda then are accepted, right? But the parts, but the point is it everything from the Veda has to be taken back to Krishna. They don't take it back to Krishna. So that's where it starts to get bogus. Right? That's the thing. So actually they're totally wrong because they're saying it's coming from the soul. So it's just an imposition, it's all there. But it's managed by his consciousness on it. But if the soul actually doesn't have content, how would it start in the first place? Because Brahman is undifferentiated. How would undifferentiated Brahman make that step to become conscious of if there is no consciousness? So that means that first step, that, you know, in other words, the primordial sin couldn't happen. The jiva couldn't involve itself, Brahman couldn't involve itself in the material energy because there is no first step, because it has to start from the soul. You know what I'm saying? That's the problem. You know, it's like we say that the sky is in the pot, but for the sky, it's just still sky. You know what I'm saying? It's like even in Ayurveda, when you're discussing it, all the spaces in the body is ether. You know, it doesn't take on a new identity because it's within your nostrils or something, or in your ears, or between your ears, like that. You know, so it doesn't. You know, it's not taken as a separate. Well, sometimes if it's between the ears, it's given a separate identity. Does that make sense? Okay, this theory does not have foundation because it proved that superimposition of cognizership on the self is an impossibility, since the self, according to Advaita, is an indifferential being. So it wouldn't matter if you superimposed, if Maya came along to superimpose, it still doesn't make any difference. Right? You make the difference, but it doesn't, Brahman doesn't make the difference by their definition. Right. There are many other details for proving this point, but an important point should be considered whether or not the act of knowing involves change or some modification in respect of the individual self, which according to the Shastras is immutable, nirvikara. For explaining this question, the Vishishtadvaita philosophy affirms that whatever modification take place, these apply to attributive knowledge, dharma bhuta jnana, which is distinct from the self, and in this way the Atma remains unaffected by them. So in other words, the knowledge that the soul gains, you know, within the material world is still material knowledge. And so the change that takes place is within the conditioning, not within the soul. The soul remains pure. Right? Does that make sense? Because if you have transcendental knowledge, the soul still remains in the same position. He doesn't change.
Is he referring to the mind, the transformation happening in the mind?
Whatever, because it's from the mind that it all starts. So when the mind transforms, that's when everything else transforms. But just like it said, whatever at the time of death, whatever's the consciousness, that form of the mind, that's what then all the senses gather around. So in other words, whatever the mind is transformed to, that's what form you get. Right, in this body, you have all those transformations, but you don't see it. You'll see it in future verse. Right? You know, in other words, he's acting like a dog now, but in the next life he will be a dog. Right? You know what I'm saying?
That's why you said, Mars, you know, the person, he has a certain, you know, level of consciousness, but then he's born in a low family because of the low thoughts.
Yeah, so it's just all... In other words, mind is the central feature. That's why it's all about controlling the mind. So yoga just focuses just on how to mechanically control the mind. Right? In other words, it may go this way and that way. So we have this mechanical process. And so it catches the mind, you know. But it takes a bit of time. Right? But the devotional service is not catching the mind and material mind as such. It's catching the interest of the soul proper. So because the soul is the one who identifies with the material facilities. So if the soul is already conscious, already has an identity, already has that tendency towards love. So if that is awoken in transcendence, then one moves away from the material and establishes in the spiritual.
So Chetu Dharpanama is removing the identity.
Removing the external identity, and then you can see the self for what the self is. Right? But now along with that, even if you clean the mind, if it's dark, you still can't see. So that means the sun has to be out. So Krishna is the sun, right? Then if we follow the process of cleaning the mirror, then with, you know, in connection with Krishna, we can see who we are. Is that? Yes.
As mood of goodness, one can tell the difference between the self and the...
Mode of goodness can. So means can. But the point is it's just how far it's taken. But because it's actually only in pure goodness you understand it properly as servant of God. Mm-hmm. But you can still, by mode of goodness, you can tell the difference between the body and the soul.
Yeah.
Because liberation means you see there's a difference. Okay. But they can't see that the actual position of the soul is servant of God. So I can see I'm not the body. But they can't see. So they can tell what I'm not, but they can't tell what I am. Mm-hmm. Right? Because if you go neti, 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 you come down to something, but then you haven't actually identified what you are. Right, you know what I'm saying? Like this here, it's not an albatross. Okay, so you know it's not a 747. You know, it's not a pineapple. It's not, you know, like this. So we can go through, but we haven't necessarily identified what it is. Mm. Like that. Does that make sense? Okay.
So you just said before that you can by purification the conditioning is changed. So,
I was just thinking, it's not Rosemary's Baby. Okay, so let's...
Going on.
Yeah. So, better focus here, okay? Enough with that example, right? Okay. Go ahead.
What did you say? It's not Rosemary's
Baby.
Oh, okay. So, you can change conditioning, but you can't change nature? Is that right?
You can... It means, in other words, you can purify the conditioning, right? But the most important is not as much purifying the conditioning as purifying the soul who is conditioned.
But I thought you said that the soul is pure.
Yes, the soul is pure, but he identifies with the conditioning. So that's why the two go together.
Okay.
Right?
So what's the difference between conditioning and nature?
It means if you're taking the nature of the soul, then that is the soul as Satchitananda. But the soul identifies with the material situation they're in, the particular body, you know, social position, everything, right? So that conditioning, that we can say, that can be purified. But the real purification is seeing the conditioning in connection with Krishna. Because if it's purified, then you'll see good qualities coming from that nature instead of bad.
Okay. So not purify as in changing it, but purify as in realizing more of the soul.
Yes, because the thing is even you come to the platform of self-realization, you know, you're fully realized as a soul. You're not the body, this and that. But still, the body you're in now will still remain.
Okay.
It's not that it'll just, you know, poof, disappear. You know, yeah, so I said, huh? You know, what happened? And someone else, she became self-realized. You know, what do you expect?
That's obvious.
Huh?
Quite an obvious thing.
Yeah.
Yeah,
well, otherwise, you know, it could have been, you know, the, who knows, fairy godmother or something came along, or, you know, something like that.
It's just a pair of Crocs.
And all that remained. Yeah, so that means what happened to everything else? You know, it's like,
transformable.
Hmm?
They are transformable.
Oh, okay. The girl is her sari, so you go. Crocs, okay. That's accessory. Yes. Okay. Yeah. Does that make sense? Yeah. So in other words, you can talk about them both as the same thing because the soul identifies with the conditioning. So when purifying the soul means you're purifying the conditioning, but the real purification or the dynamic is when you see the conditioning in connection with service to Krishna. And that is an instrument that the soul, pure soul, uses to serve Krishna. Right? And so in doing that, then you raise that conditioning to the mode of goodness. So therefore, it will you use the best qualities that are available in that conditioning. You're engaging that in Krishna's service. Does that make sense?
So when you have achieved this, then you will no longer see the material benefits of your activity?
Yes. You'll see the benefits as something to be offered to Krishna. Right? In other words, right now is that the normal stance is I look at the situation, see opportunities to serve Krishna according to my particular identity. Right? It means here it's false ego, there it's real ego. So Mother Yashoda, in the parental rasa, she'll look at the situation around her and see how, as Krishna's mother, can I do something nice here for Krishna? Right? Does that make sense? But in the material world, we'll look at it, you know, with the same thing, whatever my material identity, I'll look at it and what can I, in my conditioning, get from this situation for me? Does that make sense? And that me includes me or the extended me. You know, family, friends, you know, whatever it is. But it's that bodily conception.
No, well, I didn't mean quite like that. I meant more like, so I think I asked a question before.
No, I was just saying the clock still. The second hand moved. Oh, it just moves forward then moves back. Okay.
That's an Einstein.
Oh, relative time. Okay.
Nice. So, yeah, like I asked a question before about...
Don't worry, none of us remember.
What's that?
I said, don't worry, none of us remembers. So you don't have to feel bad.
Oh, yes.
Okay. Yeah, because we're all thinking of different things. You know, some are thinking of the clock, some are thinking of something before, some are still thinking, what has Rosemary's baby got to do? You know, so it's all, you know, it's all. Okay, so now,
okay.
Try again.
So, I asked a question a couple of days ago about how you can do something for Krishna with the intention of serving Krishna.
Right.
But then by the time you actually go to do the activity, your mind has come up with all the material benefits of that. So when you are completely purified, your mind does not do this?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, at all, at any stage?
It may come up, but you just ignore it.
Well, I'm ignoring it now.
Yeah, so just it'll become easier to ignore.
Okay, right.
Like that. It won't be such a fight. It's just, that was stupid.
Yeah.
You know, so it just becomes automatic. Okay?
So, Maharaj, we can take two perspectives about the nature. One is the nature of the soul, and one is the nature which the soul identifies with, and that can be purified, but not changed.
Yes. means just like the soul's nature can't be changed, that particular conditioning can't be changed, because you're saying then it has, it's just a manifestation of the of the opportunities of this world as is there in the universal form. So it's not that it has to change. You know, it said it has to be purified. Like Prahlad Maharaj is born in a demon family, so by dynasty he's a demon. Just like Krishna says in the Gita, of demons I am Prahlad Maharaj. Right? Because that's just a family line. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So I was just thinking that in the Western they're daemon, right? So then
daemon?
Then the problem comes up is that it's not that, but he's purified. So he's a purified demon. He's still in the family of demons. When he becomes king, he's still king in the kingdom of the demons. Right? But he's a devotee. So that's the point, is you just purify the situation you're in. Right? But as you purify, you might find that it might end up slightly different than what it was. You know what I'm saying? Because the nature is, when the mode of goodness is prominent, it's brahminical. Goodness, passion, it's kshatriya. When it's passion, ignorance, it's vaishya. When it's ignorance, it's shudra. Right? Does that make sense? So depending on what's there, there may be by association so low class, so there's so much shudra. But then as you purify, then you find out that that actual nature is there. But you didn't change it. You just purified. Right? But within that, once it gets there, that's what it'll stay at. You know. Yes.
So everyone's born, their material body is a combination of different modes of nature.
Yes.
So has everyone got the potential to be pure goodness, be made up of pure goodness, or like what actually happens?
No, it means the consciousness is pure goodness. The body's still going to function how it functions.
Can you give an example of
that? Well, let's say when you, as a conditioned soul, when you bend your arm, which way does it bend? Yeah, it means the inward from the elbow. Right? Now, let's say, you know, a flash of lightning hits you and you become a pure devotee. Okay? Then, when you bend your arm, how will it bend? Yeah. You understand? That stuff, the mechanics don't change. What changes is your consciousness, your perception of it.
Well, my understanding is that when somebody has, for example, they have a lot of motive ignorance, then they like to sleep a lot and all this sort of stuff. So,
But the body state, they're sleeping with the same body. Then when they purify the ignorance, then they'll be awake with the same body.
But they'll still be sleeping so much? Or?
No. Because sleeping so much is not the nature.
Okay. I don't want to understand it, but it's okay.
Okay. No, it means, in other words, you haven't figured out the exact point where your question is. Does that make sense? You're getting close, but you haven't actually figured out the exact point. When you get that, then it'll be easier, you'll get better understanding.
Okay.
Does that make sense? In other words, you're not giving the right examples, or you're not asking a question the right way, so you're not quite getting what you're looking for.
Okay,
so you just keep thinking about it. At one point, it'll become more clear.
Okay.
You know, either it'll come up in the conversation, or you'll figure out what's your question.
Yeah.
Like that. That one I would stick more to the light bulb rather than the lightning bolt. Does that make sense? No? I mean, to get a good idea, it's generally a lightning bulb, right? Not a lightning bolt.
Okay. It's generally a bad idea.
Bad idea. Yeah. Lightning bolt, yeah. Okay. For explaining this question, the Vishishtadvaita philosophy affirms that whatever modification take place, these apply to the attribute of knowledge, dharma bhuta jnana. In other words, the attributes means the material. which is distinct from the self, and in this way the Atma remains unaffected by them. It may be noted that jiva is regarded as gyata or knower in the sense that it is the ashraya or substrate for knowledge through which all experiences take place. Okay. He's the ashraya, means, in other words, he's the shelter for all the knowledge of the experiences take place, because he's identifying with them. Right? So in this way, he knows. By being ashraya for jnana, which is subject to modifications, jiva is not subject to any change, because you're the shelter of something, even though it changes. Like the pot is the shelter of the preparation. But the preparation is changing, but the pot doesn't change. Does that make sense? So the jiva is the shelter for the mind and the intelligence, all this, that it gains all knowledge, it changes, it does that, but it itself still doesn't change.
So suffering comes from the identified as preparation.
Yes, because you think, oh no, it's changed, it's become more green, oh no, I don't like green. You know, it's this kind of thing, yeah. Yeah, that's the point. So, in other words, he experiences because he identifies with it. He doesn't identify with it, then he doesn't experience it. Right? Or he's there in connection with it, it's so close, so therefore, you know, it's like the guy next to you, you know, he's got flies all over him, so, you know, some flies come and sit on, you know, they're annoying, right? You know. Right? Yeah. Does that make sense? Because the guy next to you, his name's not Jack, right? So that's why he's got the flies. Yes?
This explanation of the jiva being...
No flies, not Jack. Yes?
Indicates that there's some distinction between the jiva and the knowledge that he's the shelter.
Yes.
So on this transcendental platform, for the living entity and his...
knowledge and his form, there's no difference. So when we say the jiva is undifferentiated, means on the spiritual platform... It means that the jiva, his name, his form, his qualities, they're non-different. But on a small level, Krishna's on an unlimited level, right?
Ashraya is relating to material knowledge.
Yeah, but he's the ashraya for that material knowledge. But the point is that undifferentiated is on the transcendental platform, but there's still distinction. But at the same time, there's not. That's the problem is that you can have form in that you're non-different from at the same time as you can distinguish between one form and another form, like this. All the souls have the same quality, but at the same time as they're different in identity and like this. So this is where that's the point where it's by Krishna's grace only you understand. Like that. By his, because he is knowledge. Right? It said Brahman is Gyan. So he's the knowledge. So that's another thing, is if the jiva has no, but it says Brahman is knowledge, so that would mean the soul would have to have that knowledge. So that even goes against their own philosophy. You know, they're using that as one of their main, you know, mahavakyas, but then they're also going against that. Right? Because they only apply things in certain places. That's what it says. They only partially apply something in specific places. You know, just how much, you know, fits. Just like if I'm having a discussion with somebody, I'm trying to prove my point. As long as it's going the way I like, but then if I give an example that for me works, but the other person doesn't, then I'll say, oh, not like that, and then change to something else. Even though they've shown that my example didn't prove my point. But I'll just switch to something else that does prove. Rather than looking at it, well, maybe you're right. Maybe how I'm looking at it's not right. I'll just keep moving it around until I find something that you can agree with. Is that okay? Yeah. In the same way, Kartritva and Bhoktritva admitted in jiva do not involve change in it. Jiva is karta, or doer, in the sense that is the ashraya or substrate for kriti, or effort. Right, so it's only the jiva is thinking, because you think, oh, I'm enjoying this, you know? You know, but the point is what's enjoying it? The body's enjoying it. The senses are enjoying it. We're not actually connected with that. We identify with it, therefore. You know? Like the kid's out there playing ball, having a good time, so the parent identifies with that, they're happy. Kid falls over, scratches their knee, then the parent feels sad. Because you're identifying with it, but the parent didn't feel that. You know, it's not they look down and they have it on their knee and now their kid doesn't have it on their knee or something like that. You know, that's you know, Twilight Zone or something. But, you know, this is not that. Does that make sense?
Whereas I would really confuse somebody in the Upanishad, this is not that.
This is not that. Well, this is not that. You know what I'm saying? The material world, this is not that, the spiritual world.
Right.
But yeah, could still have some fun. The same explanation holds good for jiva being the bhokta. Bhoga is the experience in the form of pleasure and pain. Pleasure and pain are different states, avastas, of jnana. Right? Because you have knowledge, knowledge then defines this is this, this is that. So they're just different. You say if it's like this, then it'll be pleasure. If it's like that, it'll be pain. Right? So it can either be by the knowledge of just your experience, what you call, or by basically what the shastra will say. Right? Pleasure is an agreeable disposition of the mind, anukulatva jnana. And pain is the disagreeable one, pratikulatva jnana. As jiva, because something can be even be good, but you don't, the mind doesn't perceive it that way, then it's for you painful. You know, like the kid eating his vegetables. Like that, you know. The adults are killing themselves over vegetables, right? You know, but the kid, you know, doesn't want to see vegetables, right? You know.
Anything green is bad.
Yes.
Why is that?
Generally, I mean, the only answer that I've really come up with is because at some point in time, when they came across either that vegetable or vegetables, then it somehow or another, either they were not well at the time, so it didn't taste good, or it wasn't cooked right, or something. You know what I'm saying? There's something that was negative in the presentation.
It wasn't at least 50% sugar.
Could be. Whatever it was.
It's, they all came at one point of time. The same conclusion about all the vegetables and all the kids.
No, but the interesting thing is we've always found that if you cook the vegetables right, then they all the kids like all the vegetables. Like that. Maybe that's the trick.
Something about the particular modes that are affecting children and they don't like healthy food.
No, they don't like anything that doesn't taste good. So the point is you have to make it taste good.
Yeah,
but that's just an agreeable.
Whatever it takes.
Huh? But that's just an agreeable disposition.
That's the point. That's what we're saying. It's all just the mind.
So
but the point is if the mind agrees that it's good, that's what we're saying. Is that it's disagreeable, the pratikulat vijnan, because somehow or another there was something disagreeable about it. You know, that's all. And you don't know what previous karma was. You know, the guy was walking along very peacefully, and then one of those big, you know, monster, you know, 22 wheelers, and it was just full of cauliflowers, turned over, and then he was dead, right? So then this lifetime, you know, vegetables, oh no, you know, like that. So
that would mean a lot of 18 wheelers have to be turned over, you know, for all the children to be like that with vegetables.
True. Maybe there was a school walking by.
So if you're really purified and you don't identify with materiality anymore, then...
Well, good, you're making up your own words. I like it. I like it. That's a success of this class. Is that you think... can think beyond.
So does that mean that if somebody like slaps you in the head, then you don't feel it anymore, or you feel it and you just don't care?
You call that a smack? I'll show you a smack.
go ahead, shoot me.
No, it's just the point is that the problem of the smack isn't a problem. You know what I'm saying? It's not that you won't feel it. You know, it's just that, in other words, whatever would come up before the particular identities, you know, who is he to smack me, or, you know, whatever it is, those things won't get there. It's just understood somehow or another, I'm supposed to get smacked, so this person happened to be the instrument for it. Well, before we'd identify, he's the one to smack me.
Yeah, but physically you still feel
that. Yeah. Means you are in the body, so therefore you're connected with it. You'll feel it.
Okay.
If you're not in this body, you're in your spiritual body, then you won't notice what's going on here. But then you won't be walking down the street either.
You said that when he was beaten, sometimes it said that he didn't feel, and sometimes it said that Lord Chaitanya covered him.
Well, it means, but if Lord Chaitanya covered him, would he feel it?
Yeah, only the covering.
Huh?
He would feel Lord Chaitanya, wouldn't he?
Yeah, but he'd be absorbed in Lord Chaitanya, so he wouldn't notice the difference. Does that make sense? Yeah, so I'm just saying you just have to see what's the level. The point is the Lord gets involved. But the point is that spirituality is not so much whether you feel something, the interaction of the material modes, it's whether you remember Krishna. That's the important point. You know, like Prabhupada said, he was in the hospital and they're coming with their needles and pinching and poking and this and that. So he says, you know, he just said, I'm tolerant. Right? Because, you know, the point is the body's not functioning right. If they can do something about it, you know, and make it function better, then fine. You know, and then when he figured out that they don't know what's going on, then he started his own treatment. And then, you know, when he was better, then he said, get me out of here. You know? So Brahmananda was wheeling Prabhupada down the hallway, you know. And all the,
wait.
Who knows it?
Yeah. Okay. As jiva is the ashraya for such states of experience, it is regarded as bhokta, or enjoyer of pleasure or pain. The pain involved in such mental disposition applies to the attribute of knowledge, dharma bhuti jnana, not to jiva. Right? Because in other words, they hit the body, they didn't hit the soul. Right? Does that make sense? So because the soul is the shelter for this particular situation. Right, that particular understanding, therefore the pleasure of pain is there. But they don't hit the soul, so the soul doesn't become disturbed. But it's not that the body doesn't become disturbed.
So when this happens, it's the consciousness, so it's not just about you saying, oh, like you get hit and then you say, oh, that person hit me, he's an idiot, or whatever. It's not even thinking that, right?
Yeah, avoiding, because the point is his actual intellectual capacity and you being hit in the head, they don't really necessarily have anything to do with each other.
But it goes further than that. Does it go as far as like not even complaining about the pain, or can you say I'm physically hurting and not talk about?
No, but the where in all this is the connection to Krishna? See, this is where the difficulty comes. So we're trying to identify Krishna consciousness as a particular state of interacting with the material energy, but Krishna's not involved. Krishna consciousness means Krishna's involved. So you'd be remembering Krishna. That's the important thing. So whether it hurts or not, that's a secondary point. The point is whether you're remembering Krishna.
So then you can.
You know what I'm saying? Because otherwise, then you're going into the Stoic philosophy. Right, which is just, you know, grit your teeth and just get in there and it doesn't matter and like that. Which is useful for getting through material energy. But the point is as far as Krishna consciousness, it's just being favorably conscious of Krishna. Does that make sense?
So when that something like that happens, then you say, oh, that must mean Krishna is trying to tell me something, or like.
It could be so many things. It can be just the reaction to previous karma, and by Krishna's grace, it's only a smack in the head. I didn't get run over by a, you know, a, you know, garbage truck or something. You know?
Cauliflower truck.
Cauliflower truck, yeah. Last night was a cauliflower truck, so this time you just got a smack on the head. And then if you look down, you'll see there's a cauliflower on the floor. He hit you with a cauliflower. Right? So reduce from a whole truckload of cauliflowers down to one cauliflower.
There's an article in the paper about cauliflowers.
Yeah?
Maybe.
Oh.
Smack over the head with a paper.
Yeah, yeah. Then you open the thing. Prices of cauliflowers. You know, like that, yeah. Does that make sense? So the point is the Krishna consciousness, not those things. That we're just supposed to try to see whatever situation we're in connection with Krishna. So however you're doing that, that's why it says by hook or by crook, however you can do it, then it's just going to, you have to, you remember Krishna, connected to Krishna.
Okay, so the most purified point or the goal any single situation, anything,
like
anything, reminds you of Krishna?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Not that you're not bothered by material energy, it reminds you of Krishna.
Okay.
Right? Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. In other words, you just have to switch from the negative into the positive. Okay. Theory of free will and determination. Still the same time. If the action of jiva is controlled by paramatma, does the jiva have any freedom at all to act? Right. Mm-hmm. So these are always like, well, where's my okay, yeah. If jiva has no freedom to act, the scriptural injunctions enjoining duties to be performed by the individual can have no significance. Right, because if he has no freedom, then he's just being forced to do all these things. So I'm bad because that's the way I'm being made to do it. If I'm good, that's what. Yeah, whatever. Some variety of being. How you say? Infused with joy, you know, whatever endings you want to put on it, whatever declinations you want to do with it.
And joining would be appropriate.
And joining.
Yeah,
oh, okay, so you're saying join instead of joy.
Causing you to take part in that.
Oh, injunctions and joining duties. Okay, yeah, that would be better. I was thinking more of that, the enjoyment coming from the duties. But here it would mean enjoining duties. Okay, that makes more sense. Okay. The scriptural injunctions enjoining duties to be performed by the individual can have no significance, because why would the scriptures tell you to do that? You know, unless it's... A distinction is drawn between the initial action of the jiva and the subsequent activity. In all human effort, the individual initial wills to do a thing. To this extent, he is free to do as what he desires. Based on this initial action, the subsequent action which follows is approved by Ishwara. By according such an approval, Ishwara incites the individual to proceed further. Ishwara gives his approval to the activity initiated by an individual. He does not become the karta, the doer. The real karta is the individual. Right? So here is that the jiva, he has the will to do this or that. Once he's made that determination to take part in that activity, then the activity, the mechanics of the activity itself, that is then is approved by Ishwara, and then the modes of nature carry it out. That's why he's only an instrument. So his instrumentness is his initial desire, right? That's how he's that. But because he identifies with it, therefore the result that comes from that is his. Right, but in the same way as before, it's, you know, when we're looking at the jiva, he's not actually involved. It's the mind and senses that are doing, and he's just the shelter. So the same way, the Lord is the shelter of the jivas and the material energy, but they are taking part in this thing, though he's maybe arranging it. Just like the potency by which the senses and sense objects can interact is based on the potency of the jiva. That's the individual jiva. But for the actual, the jiva to actually engage in activities, that means other jiva, everything else, that's the Lord's potency. Right? So in the same way, the Lord is not the doer, though he's giving the facility. Right? Does that make sense? So ultimately, you can say the jiva is not the doer, but the jiva identifies with the activity, therefore he's the doer. But it's not the Lord. Right? So the activities that go on here is because jivas want them to go on. So therefore they happen.
Like the gardener who killed the cow.
Yeah, like the gardener who killed the cow.
I just heard this pastime about how Parvati cursed King Shinjuke to become a demon, and that was, and he accepted that because that was, you know, Krishna's the way that Krishna wanted him to serve.
Just, you know, it's just a matter of, it's Krishna's mercy, so whatever arrangement is there, he'll serve Krishna in that capacity.
Then what's to say that the people acting like demons now, that's not just Krishna's plan for their service?
Are they devotees? Because he was born as a demon, but he himself is a devotee. Yeah, so that's how you tell it. Just like Prahlad Maharaj is born in a demon family, but he acted as a devotee. So like that, you can tell the difference. Okay. Yes? No? So the time is up, we can see.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki.
Jai.
Janitai Gaur.
To last less than a second.
Yeah, it seems to.
Will we have classes when the boys go?
We shouldn't.
Oh, we shouldn't.
Yeah, no. Just the boys won't have classes. Yeah, I think, I'm not sure how it'll work out. They'll probably set things up. But, okay. Yeah. Okay. But, you know, how it worked at the end of the whole thing. But we'll have to. Mm-hmm.